I thought that was a really cool use case of like, okay, there's like not like necessarily like a creative tool, but it's like, okay, because you like make a digital product feel like you're in the same space together, actually makes the efficiency for, in that case, nurses and doctors a lot better.
Hey, before we get started, I'd like to remind you that the full episode is only available to our subscribers. The current platforms you can subscribe on are YouTube, Spotify, Apple, and Patreon. On the full version of this episode, hear about Steven's thoughts on LiveBlock's pricing, and of course, all of our tool tips. And with that, let's get on to the episode. Hello, welcome to the DevTools FM podcast. This is a podcast about developer tools and the people who make them. I'm Andrew, and this is my co-host, Justin.
Hey, everyone. Our guest today is Steven Fabry. Sorry if I messed that up. CEO and co-founder of LiveBlox. Steven, so glad to have you on. We've heard a lot about LiveBlox, but before we dig into that, would you like to tell our listeners a little bit more about yourself?
Yeah, sure. Thanks. Thanks for having me, guys. Good to meet you as well. And yeah, so LiveBlox, I guess a bit by myself first. So I'm Steven. I grew up in the southwest of France, but I've been kind of all over the place. So I studied computer science. Then I went to do an internship in Canada, in Quebec, for a little while. And then decided to move to Sydney in Australia. So I was just going to travel there, go around Australia like a lot of people do. And I ended up staying there for 7.5 years. Worked in a different tech companies there. Started a couple of startups. And eventually became Australian, so got my citizenship there. So like a trip that turned into a life-changing kind of situation. But yeah, long story short, towards the end there, I worked on a tool called Easy, and that was a web animation tool. And there wasn't any tools at the time that could do this when I was started working on this. When you wanted to do animations, or for the web specifically, you had to know code, right, to do it. And so I started making this tool where you could like put like some of your sketch layers or Photoshop layers into this tool, and it will enable designers to kind of animate stuff, and you would get the CSS and code for it on the other side, which was super helpful for some of the designers I worked with that didn't necessarily knew how to code. And that basically led me to InVision. And so I started working at InVision from Sydney remotely. And most of the team was in the US. And so two years into that journey, ended up moving to New York City, Brooklyn. So I think that's where you're at, Justin, right now. And so, yeah, I lived in New York for a few years. I kept working at InVision for a while. And that experience at InVision is kind of what got me introduced to the problem I'm working on now with Guillaume and the team at LiveBlox, because we were working on a tool called InVision Studio. I don't know if you guys remember. It's more for a tool for designers, but it's essentially a design tool very similar to Figma, except that Figma is way better, if I'm being honest. But the point is that tool was a desktop-based application that designers could use to design apps, websites. You could do like UI design, but also animation, prototyping, that sort of stuff. And it was all file-based, desktop-based at first. And Figma started to get a lot of like market shares, a lot of interest in the design community. And we basically had a project of converting InVision Studio from a desktop-based application to a browser-based multiplayer where you could see like cursors and be like multiple people in the same file. And so I was heading up design for that project, and we had like a dedicated squad full of engineers kind of working on this problem. And basically that took over a year to get to a first version of that browser-based application. And I had no idea at the time I would be starting a company in this space, like no idea. But I got very intrigued, and if I'm being honest, a little bit frustrated by the fact that it took so long. And even after all that time, the experience wasn't quite as smooth as what you would experience in Figma. Like it would be a little slow to like update some of the, like as you would drag stuff around, like layers into the tool, they would take like a couple of seconds to update on the other side. And then live cursors were like kind of out of sync with that. And so as a designer, I was a little bit frustrated that we couldn't, like we could, but it was a lot of work to get it, you know, performant and work really well like Figma. And so I ended up leaving InVision after 4.5 years. I had a great time there, met a bunch of great people. And one of them was my co-founder, Guillaume. He's incredible, a super talented engineer, but also really gets the business side of things. I'm very lucky to work with him. And towards the end at InVision, when he joined, actually a little fun fact, maybe I'm going in completely different directions here. But Guillaume's first day at InVision was when we had an offsite. And I don't know if you guys know, but InVision was one of the pioneers in terms of remote work. So we were all working remotely. There was no office. Way before COVID. So the first time I met Guillaume, we were in San Francisco. And basically we realized that we're on the same team. So that was another French person on the team. He lived in Montreal. He still lives in Montreal. But yeah, when we met, we realized we were from the same region in France, which is like super, super random because it's like a tiny rural kind of remote area. And so, yeah, we got along really well, worked on a bunch of projects together. And quickly we decided, okay, we should do something together. We didn't know what it was going to be. And that's how I met him. And yeah, we ended up, both of them eventually leaving InVision, working on a video/presentation tool. And when we worked on that, months into the project, we realized, damn, this is the same story that's happening again. We're spending all of our time trying to figure out the real-time aspect of things, and we have pretty much no time to focus on the core mechanics of the actual tool itself. And yeah, that's basically when it clicked, and we decided to basically take some of the stuff that we had built for this tool, productify it, and make it so that any developer and company could use it to build collaborative experiences. That was a long intro, I just realized. Sorry.
No, all great. Good. All good. That's great. Such a cool story. So what was that pivot like? I'm assuming that you had like investors at the time or something. Did you have to like...
No.
Oh, okay.
No investors at the time. We were... we knew we wanted to do something together, so we were kind of experimenting on different ideas.
Gotcha.
And because we had this background in creative tools, and that's something like I'm personally passionate about. I love making tools that people use to create stuff with those tools. So like that, I love that. And I love like super interactive, like design tools, where there's a ton of things you can do in like one space. I found those products super fun to design, but also build. They're like quite challenging because there's like a million paths people can take. So we just felt, Pitch didn't exist at the time. And working at InVision, we had to put a lot of presentations together and videos to communicate asynchronously, to pitch ideas and collaborate and do all that kinds of stuff. And the idea was like, okay, Google Docs, Google Slides it's not ideal to us because we like beautiful products and like it didn't feel as good as an Apple keynote. And we also felt like it was lacking a video component to it. So we're like, okay, let's try to make like a iMovie meets Apple keynote, but in the browser and make it multiplayer. That was kind of the idea behind that tool. But yeah, eventually, basically, it clicked. We decided to go onto the multiplayer side of things, dev tools like platform, API side of things for building collaborative application, because it's a problem that we faced at InVision firsthand. There was a full dedicated team like building that, and it took like over a year and a half, like or close to a year and a half to complete. And for us also building that tool, it felt like, damn, like we're spending, again, like months like trying to figure this out. And we tried like a bunch of different technologies that existed at the time, like YJS, AutoMerge, but they're all great. And like we might still use some of those today, but they didn't quite work the way we wanted them to. And so it clicked in our eyes, like we had this problem, we have it again. There's probably something there that felt like we should pivot into this direction. But yeah, we hadn't raised any money at the time yet.
For our listeners who may not know what LiveBlocks is, can you give us like the elevator pitch?
Yeah, maybe I should have started with that. That's a good point. So LiveBlocks is a real-time infrastructure for developers. And so what we enable developers to do is we provide them with like tools and APIs to build collaborative apps. So if you want to build a Figma-like product, a Google Docs-like product, a Notion-like product, anything that's collaborative, which is, in my opinion, pretty much all SaaS products, you can build that with LiveBlocks a lot easier than if you were to kind of build that real-time multiplayer collaboration infrastructure yourself. So that's basically what we do at LiveBlocks. We provide the APIs and tools to make that a lot easier for developers.
Yeah, that's really awesome. You know, that story that you're telling, though, about like, oh, this is a continual problem. It's something that I've seen as well, and especially as real-time collaboration becomes more table stakes. We had Sunil Pai back on episode 49, who he's working on PartyKit, which, you know, if we were talking to him on that episode, like if we think back, it's like the things that you had mentioned, like YJS, it's been around for a while, and it's been sort of like one of the main ways. And then there have been like some other tools, and like Socket.io and stuff like that. But they leave a lot to be desired. And something that I think is interesting about LiveBlocks. So could you talk a little bit about like how it integrates into your like applications?
Yeah.
Because I thought that was like a unique positioning that y'all had.
Yeah, that's a really good point you bring that up. There's a ton of great tools out there. You know, you mentioned Socket.io. There's even like Pusher, Ably, that are really good for like this kind of like WebSocket communication solution. Then there are tools like the one Sony is working on, PartyKit, I think is awesome. What we're trying to do at LiveBlocks, the entire thesis behind LiveBlocks is that our goal is to, if I were to summarize it, is to try and combine the Figma infrastructure and offer that as a service and make that all that stuff work well together. So what's that stuff? There is, when you think about collaboration, there is the collaboration that happens within a document. At LiveBlocks, we call them rooms because that's the concept we use. And that's when you want to build multiplayer experiences like Figma, where you have multiple people in a document and the document is the artifact on which you collaborate on. And so to build those experiences, you need stuff like presence, broadcasting. You also need like some kind of storage solution to store the document and enable multiple people to edit that document at the same time without having any conflicts in the data. So that's one part. But if you think about those collaborative SaaS products, you also need stuff like commenting, where people can like mention people, bring them into this document you're working on to collaborate. There's also this concept of like, okay, I need to share this document, right? Like I need to copy the URL, get people into this, which ties into a little bit of like permissions. Who can see this document? Who can edit it? You know, that sort of stuff. And on top of that, there is also, okay, now that you have those documents, you also need to build a view where you can browse the documents and organize them. And so what we're trying to do is to combine all those use cases into one solution that works really well together, so that people can build not only the multiplayer experience, but also like all the surroundings that you need and the APIs that you need to build a true like SaaS collaborative product. And so for that, you need to integrate multiple tools together. So you need to integrate a WebSocket mechanism to enable the real-time connections within the multiplayer document. You need to enable conflict resolution on the data of the document itself. But you also need like REST APIs to like be able to tap into all the rooms and documents that have been created to be able to build like those document views, et cetera, et cetera. So I guess you get the idea of where I'm going with this. Does that make sense?
Yeah. So does like LiveBlocks, is LiveBlocks kind of dipping its toe into like user management too? Because it seems like there's a lot of that in the docs and even some features teased about it.
So we really do not want to go into authentication, and that's completely not our business. We want to work really well, integrate really well with tools that already exist, like NextAuth or Clerk, which is awesome. I've been using it. Such great DX. we don't want to do that at all. Like, there's already plenty of problems that we're tackling, and this is definitely not one of the problems we want to tackle. But we want to integrate really well with those tools so that you can build like permissions and stuff like that for document level like permissions. So that way, like, basically when you integrate with Liveblocks, I guess, I just realized, Justin, I didn't answer your question earlier on how you actually integrate with Liveblocks. That might help. So I'm going to talk about Next because that's probably the tool like people are most familiar with listening to this podcast. When you have a Next project, you can basically create, you have a package for React that you can install. So live, add liveblocks/react. And when you do that, we give you different, like a room provider, and then we give you different hooks to basically integrate with the stuff I was talking about earlier, like presence, storage, broadcast, all that kind of stuff. And then to connect to Liveblocks through those like React APIs, you're able to create a client and authenticate that client, authorize that client in your backend endpoint. And that's where you basically make the connection between your authentication provider, Cleric or whatever you use, and assign a user ID to like a Liveblocks, the Liveblocks context, if you will. And then what we enable is that each room can have like groups and user permissions, and you just pass an ID and you like set it to read-only or write and that type of stuff. And we enable kind of permissions that way within the product. So then you can like, when you create your room, you can decide, okay, this user is going to have access, this user is not going to have access, or this group is going to have access or not have access. And groups can enable you to build stuff like groups, like folders of projects. And that also enables you to build like share dialogues, which are like a standard pattern for every kind of SaaS collaborative tool out there.
Yeah, looking at your guys' share dialogue, I'm like, that looks exactly like our share dialogue. I built that exact design just in my design system.
Exactly. And it's like, up until now, the only ways you could integrate with Liveblocks is through our client packages. And so right now we have React. We have a standard like JavaScript package, but then we have a React on top of that. If you use React, that makes it a little bit easier. We can still use the client package if you build with Vue or Svelte or whatever front-end framework you use. And then we also have packages for like state management libraries. So if you use like Zustand or Redux, then you can integrate with that and kind of turn your store into a collaborative store that multiple people can edit. And so that's the way you integrate today. So you still need to do quite a bit of React work to integrate. But I'm pretty particularly excited that we're starting to work on like providing actual pre-built components that will make it super easy to do like very specific stuff, such as comments. I think comments it's been one of the top most requested feature requests we've had, and we're shipping that as an actual React component that you like kind of like style yourself, and like it's all accessible. Keyboard shortcuts are handled, and you can just compose the UI like the way you want and make it look exactly like your product. So that's gonna be another way you can also integrate with Liveblocks.
Yeah, that'll be huge. That'll be huge.
Yeah, that's super cool. Like most other like collaboration libraries are really just like nuts and bolts, but like those things like access popovers and comments are things that you're going to want. So it just kind of makes sense that you would do them.
Yeah, exactly. Like I think that's gonna be the truth. Like all those patterns are like very similar between products, and so mm-hmm. if we can provide like a pre-built component for those, that helps you like get up and running very quickly, like in a couple of minutes. And then obviously there's always an escape path. You know, if you want to go full custom, you can still do that, which I really like. It's kind of similar. I don't know if you guys use Cleric. You know, they provide you like the pre-built component, which is awesome. Like you can literally build like the, you know, the user panel where you change all your settings. You can also have like the login screen, all kind of work out of the gate, which used to take like weeks of work before. And even if you're not happy with that, you can, okay, cool, I'm going to use the custom hooks and like kind of do a custom UI myself. But I think it's great for adoption, like helping you sort of get started.
Yeah, that's super awesome. So this that seems like a very clear differentiator is like, okay, we're actually starting to sort of offer these like somewhat pre-built product, like parts of products that you can like integrate to like get started faster. How, like, what's your sort of narrative around how LiveBlox tries to differentiate itself from the like broader real-time sort of platform marketplace? Because it like does seem like, you know, with real-time becoming such an important, it almost feels like table stakes these days. It's like people want real-time in their apps. And I think, like you're saying, the engineering effort it takes to build that custom is just like way too much. So there are like, we're, you know, seeing more products in the similar categories, LiveBlox, like crop up because people are having the same realization. It's like, oh, this is really hard. How do you like place LiveBlox in this overall ecosystem?
Yeah, that's a good one. Yeah, I mean, that kind of ties into some of the stuff I said earlier. I think our strength and something we always focus on is we try to actually make sure all that ecosystem, like all those experiences you need to build to make a collaborative product work really well together so that you don't have a lot of plumbing to do, which in my experience, when you build products, like the plumbing part is like what's hard. There's a bunch of like great technologies, but then when you want to make them work well together, sure you can, but it's going to be hard to do. And so that's always been a focus of ours. So making that stuff very easy. DX is super critical for us. Like, I don't know if you can tell, but I don't know. We spend a lot of time on like documentation, even like the APIs themselves in React. Like, we try to do all that stuff like in TypeScript with like comments, so that when you use that, where it doesn't matter where you use, where you connect with LiveBlox, either it's in VS Code, in the docs, in the dashboard, we try to like have a really good DX on like on all the touch points you can have to like reduce the time to value as much as possible. So I don't know if I went on a tangent, if I'm answering exactly your question, but I think we're trying to make stuff like work really well together, so you have very little plumbing to do, and make it very pragmatic for you to not only build a new collaborative product from scratch, but also you're an existing like SaaS company, you have an existing product that has worked for like a decade or whatever, you already have your API endpoints to like store the data, you have all that stuff. Our goal is to make that transition very easy for also those companies so that they don't have to re-architect everything. I guess for us, something we always think about is like DX, time to value. How are we pragmatic about the solution we offer? Even if sometimes the solution is, from an engineering standpoint, might not be always the purest approach, but it might actually be the most pragmatic one that's the one that wins and makes it very easy for companies to build and make those products collaborative. That's kind of the approach I would say we take.
Yeah, I definitely think the DX point shines through. I was looking at your developer tools that you have. Those look really, really awesome. And it's another one of these things that's a little bit understated. So if you're doing real-time stuff, and especially if you're doing like, oh, well, I've built sort of like a slap together, it's like a YJS custom WebSocket thing. It's like figuring out this like the state of everything, it can be hard. So this like built-in dev tools where you're seeing like what the collaborative blocks are on the page and like what their current state is, and as they're updating, that's super slick. It's so cool.
I'm glad you brought this up. Like, I love this product. So just for people listening, this is the LiveBlox Dev Tools browser extension. So it works for Chrome, Firefox, and Edge. Just want to be sure I was not missing one of them. We used an awesome company for this, our product. It's called Plasmo. So I don't know if you've built extensions for browsers. It's awesome. I haven't used it myself, but like the team has been, it's enabled us to build like a lot faster. And I love this product first because I know it's like it's super hard to like debug and build collaborative experiences because you have like so many people that can manipulate the state. Like, you have presence, broadcast, the storage itself. So being able to like see all that stuff makes the DX like it's really hard for me to think about building a multiplayer experience without this now. But what I like most is that this project was actually an idea from Vincent on the team and Mark, they worked on it together. They kind of pitched the idea of building this. And that's one thing I was like super, super happy to see, like that there's something that actually came from like the team. They felt like they had this problem and they kind of pitched it to us, and they're like, okay, let's spend a couple of cycles on this and try to get it to market. And they've done an awesome job.
Yeah, I just want to second that your docs and all the websites are just like absolutely beautiful. Like even just looking at the examples, like the live cursor one, like you have this like simple, easy to read code, and then examples that just like work so fluidly. It's a very, very good sell. So good job on that.
Thank you. It's been a lot of work from the team, and I'm glad that that comes true. And
oh, definitely.
A little fun fact: when this episode is gonna go live, we may have an entirely new docs. I'm really excited to. We're working on a new. I mean, it's kind of the same base, but like we're working on a new version of the docs that I think is gonna be super sweet. It was like an interactive tutorial, like side by side view where you can actually get started. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm like, I love that stuff, but I hope people are gonna like it.
Yeah. So let's get into, like, I guess, a little more technical questions about how LiveBlocks works. So how does it deal with conflicts? If you're doing collaboration, there's very high chances that you might have conflicts in the things that you're dealing with. So how does LiveBlocks deal with that?
Yeah. So again, I don't wanna. This was mostly handled by my co-founder, CTO, and the engineering team. But the way it works, so as I said earlier, we have, you know, the multiplayer rooms, so rooms that are collaborative. We have that on the edge, so they're like very close to user locations. And within those rooms, we have a product called storage. And the storage is made of conflict-free data types that we enable developers to use within their applications. So we have three conflict-free data types. We have live lists. You know, it's very similar to an array, except that now you can have multiple people kind of reordering stuff in that list, and we're going to resolve the indexing of that. You have maps, live maps, and live objects. And the approach we took is not like a pure CRDT solution like YJS, which YJS is very kind of, that has a bias towards like text collaboration. Ours is very similar to how Figma does things. So we resolve some of the conflicts on the server. It's not like decentralized where, like, you know, everything kind of happens on the client. So that's kind of how it works. Some of the conflicts that really happens, we kind of resolve them on the server, or the last change wins. And then from other stuff like reordering lists, that's some of the stuff we handle, like based on the index you put, we enable multiple people to kind of reorder items within the list. So that's at a glance kind of how it works.
So I don't know if you know this, but like the Redux one, do you like, when you're using it, do you have to declare live lists in objects, or is it just like, oh, my Redux thing is our live list and a live object thing now?
So for so it's a lot more explicit if you use the client or the React package directly, because you have access to those data structures. You just say, okay, I'm going to create a live list, and you define that. You have your config file for live blocks, and you define the types of like your data, your document and stuff. And you have full control over that. For Zustand and Redux, you basically put a middleware of live blocks, and then behind, like on your current state, and behind the scenes, we kind of resolve that and try to put stuff into live lists, live maps, live objects. But we have to do a bit of guessing. So sometimes we don't fully get the intents, but there's like a way to kind of, within that, kind of define that yourself if you need to, and if you see something that doesn't quite work. But again, this is a good example of like trying to be pragmatic. On like, there's a bunch of like developers that have an existing app, and they use like Zustand, for example, or Redux to manage the state. And it makes it very easy for them to like see the value of LiveBlocks of like, okay, I've got my state, I want to make it multiplayer. And it's very easy to kind of add middleware of LiveBlocks and kind of see how it could look like. And then, you know, as you want to take this to production, then you kind of dive a little bit deeper and kind of decide the structures you want to use and that sort of stuff.
You said that like on the server, the last person wins. How does it deal with offline then? I work on a product called Descript, and it's very possible that somebody was trying to like work on their video offline, worked for an hour, and then wants to merge the stuff back in. So how does like that situation work?
Yeah, so that's a good question. LifeBlocks currently, when you use storage, you can basically go offline for a little bit, and we will persist the data on like memory, meaning that if you go offline for, you know, 30 minutes or an hour or 2 hours, and then when you reconnect, it will kind of automatically send all that those changes that you've made and kind of resolve the conflicts that way. That's how it works. We're also working on like storing that in IndexedDB so that it can persist a lot longer. But I think that also includes some like, I think at a certain point, realistically, when you build like a Figma-like product or a Google Docs-like product, you want your system to be reliable so that if you're on a flaky connection or if you go offline for a little bit, you can still work and you're not going to be disrupted. Everything happens locally first. So like everything is instant. It feels like it's super responsive and kind of syncs, you know, as it sees fit. Like if you're logged in, if you go offline, it's going to sync back up when you go back online. But then if you enable full offline, which is something we want to do, then you probably need like processes. I think it's something we still need to figure out. But like, if you work offline for like 2 weeks and somebody else works offline for 2 weeks, like you're gonna have completely. If you work in the same part of a document, it's gonna be completely different. So it's like, at that point, you probably need to enable people to kind of build like an interface, like Git or something like where you can branching. Like sort of branching or like.
Yeah.
So. Yeah, that's an interesting problem, which we haven't fully solved yet. Right now, we're just focusing on the real time, making sure it works if you go offline for a little bit. But there's a big topic there to do, to figure out for sure.
Reconciliation is really hard.
Mm-hmm. Definitely, yeah.
I complain about Git merge conflicts. I can't imagine complaining about, like, how do you resolve collaboration conflicts? That just seems quite hard.
Definitely, yeah.
Like a rebase for your data. Interesting.
Yeah.
So what part of, you know, you'd said before that this, when you were creating LifeBlocks or before you created LifeBlocks, you're building a different product. You're building something that you still ended up working a lot on real-time collaboration. So what part of that and even your time at Envision sort of shaped maybe the DX of LifeBlocks or how y'all approach building this product?
Yeah, that's a good one. This is my first time building a dev tools. And so I've always liked building stuff. I always liked engineering stuff, but most of my career, I've been a product designer. I actually started as a web developer, but worked with a UX designer. I was on the UX team and I quickly made the shift towards more like product design because I really didn't like building stuff that people would design and I would have to build them. That's something I didn't really enjoy. I kind of liked the idea of like, here's what I want to design. Here's what I imagine this experience to feel. And I kind of wanted to build that. I was always interested in the interaction side of things. And so a great UX is always like something I'm like obsessed about. Whether it's in a UI tool, you know, like when you build like a SaaS product, you actually build like a UI and it's like, here's the thing that people interact with. Here's the path that people will take. With a dev tool, it's a lot harder, I think, to do a great DX. I'm still learning a lot, like, because you have so many different touch points. Like, it's not like, here's the product you go to and you're going to use this. It's like, here is an API you can use that way. Here's another API you can use that way. And here's a docs that's over there. Here's your dashboard that's over there. You have like a dozen different touch points where they play a huge part in the developer experience. And that's the thing like that I find really challenging with dev tools, but I'm also obsessed about. Like DX is the most important thing to me. Like making sure, like thinking about all the flows or like how people could interact with LifeBlocks, making sure it's always clear what needs to be done. So I don't know if I got influenced by my experience at Envision or working on like design tools in the past, but I would say that my design background, I would say, is probably what drives kind of user experience or DX for OKs, making sure we have a really good DX, something I'm really passionate about. But it's a teamwork. Like it's like with the UI, like with a SaaS product where you have a UI that you interact with as a user, sure, everybody has a role to play in making sure that's a great experience. It's a team's effort. But a lot comes down to, like, if you have a really good design team, a really good front-end, really good front-end engineers, chances are you're going to have a really good product, a really good experience. With DevTools, it has to come from everybody that works on the product. So, like, engineers, in fact, are almost more responsible than designers on the actual UX, because they're going to be the ones shaping the APIs, the names that you use within the APIs. Is that going to scale for, like, years to come? Is this concept going to remain true? Like, you have to think deeply about that stuff. Are you putting the right comments in there in TypeScript so that when you use that in VS Code, you see the tooltip that tells you how to use this? When you have that tooltip, is there a link that takes you to the documentation? And the documentation, who's going to write this? Is it a DevRel on the team? So it touches so many different points that it has to be core and central to everything we do. And it has to be part of the culture of the company. That's one of the biggest challenge and something that I'm like, I think about a lot. And I'm happy where we're at, but I think there's a lot more we can do even to make the DX even better.
Yeah. DX to me seems a little more higher stakes than UX. UX, you can be like, oh, we shipped a crappy experience. We make them click different. But if we ship the wrong DX, it's like, oh, these people have to change their code now. And that's a lot harder than just saying, oh, learn this new workflow.
Exactly. And then you're going to have, like, a new version of the app. It's not an easy ask to ask people to upgrade. Like, some upgrades might be like, okay, cool, it's going to be 5 minutes, I'm going to do it, fine. But why is a company or developer going to upgrade to a new package of your product and spend, like, hours doing this? Like, why would they do this? They're already getting the value. So, like, it's every decision you make in a dev tool is, so, some of them are like a one-way door. It's really hard to revert those decisions. You can always do, but there's a cost to that, which, yeah, it's a lot harder. It's a lot harder to build a dev tool, like, in my experience, than, like, some of the stuff I worked on in the past. But it's fun. It's fun.
Yeah, developers are hard to market to. They're, like, very finicky crowd, and they have very low patience, and they have a lot of confidence in what they think they're capable of.
That's true.
There's a lot of interesting things there.
Yeah, it's a good point. It's like, it's hard. For sure. I'm learning a lot, definitely learning that as I'm working on LifeBlocks. It's tough because, like, when you work on a SaaS product, you build it, you design it, you ship it, people use it or they don't. But with developers, you build something, but everything you do, they could actually build it themselves. So it's like, it's a challenge. Like, you have to do something that's really good and, like, to convince them, because they actually understand how it's built. They could actually build some of that stuff themselves. Yeah, it's definitely got its challenges for sure.
Yeah. We've touched on it a little bit, with, like, the types of data that you can add to your app through LifeBlocks and comments. But are there any other types of collaborative presence that we haven't talked about?
Yeah. Presence, there's basically this concept of presence we have within LifeBlocks. And so there's a ton of experiences you can build with this, but the most common one that we see is, like, live cursors. You know, if you want to build a live cursor experience where, like, cursors are flying around, it's very easy to do that with presence. Essentially, we enable you within React to pass, like, the use presence hook, and then you can, like, define your XY coordinates for the cursor and on the other side kind of show, like, a SVG component that looks like a cursor and kind of move stuff around that way. But there's a ton of stuff you can build with presence. Essentially, the idea of this product is to, when you think about multiplayer collaborative product, all we're trying to do is to replicate some of the experiences we have in the real world, in the physical world, bring that to the digital world. And so when you are in a room with somebody, like, literally in the same physical room, you see, hey, Andrew is over there in this corner. Justin is in this corner. I see what they're doing. Or if you work on a whiteboard, an actual physical whiteboard, you grab a post-it note and you write with your pen, I'm going to see that you're, like, holding the post-it note and you're writing on it. So that's basically what presence does. Like, we help you show, like, okay, live avatar stack, for example, in digital product to see, like, here are the people that are currently here, but here's actually what they're actually currently doing right now. Like, you know, they're holding the post-it note. Or if you're doing, like, a multiplayer form, like you could see, okay, Andrew is currently editing this input field and you show a border around it. Or like Justin is editing this slide, so you show a border around the slide. Those are like the typical kind of presence, like cursors, carrots on text editors. Live avatar stack is a common one. But then there's also stuff that maybe a bit less obvious, like stuff like follow me kind of features, you know, like where you can drive if you build like a deck, like a, I guess if you were building like the Google Slides kind of experience, or like a pitch, being able to drive the experience for everybody where people can follow you around. That's interesting. That's another use case that we tend to see.
Yeah, that one's a nice little feature. Like, you wouldn't think about that, but the fact that you can just kind of like drop that in, so nice. People asked me about that for Descript, and I was like, I don't know.
should use Live Blocks, maybe.
Well, we have actually, I think, our own in-house solution called Tri-Merge Sync. It's an open source thing. It does a lot of things that I don't quite know about, but yeah, it seems to work pretty good.
That's good, then. Perfect.
So we've talked about a lot about the technology now, but what are some of your favorite use cases of Live Blocks that you've seen out in the wild? Have you seen anything unexpected where you're like, wow, that's really interesting?
Yeah, definitely there's been some of them. Especially, I mean, when we first built this, we built a tool that we needed ourselves. And coming from like a creative tools background, the product was very much designed with that in mind. Although we had a our thesis was like, okay, if we make it super easy for people to build Figma-like experiences, not only creative tools companies will adopt this, but like companies in like all kinds of industry will. And so, to me, like one of the good moments where I started seeing this was like one company in Australia called Propeller. They do like 3D maps. They take drone footage and makes maps out of them for like civil engineers and like big projects, like building bridges and those kind of stuff. And they made like some of the maps collaborative so that you can actually draw on them. And when you draw it, like calculates the amount of dirt as you draw, like, and like you can move it. So I thought that was a cool use case that sounded like so like creative tools. Another one that I really liked recently is a company called Dialogue. It's a telemedicine company based in Canada. And they have this internal tool for nurses and doctors that they use to look at like patient files and go on like digital like consultations with them. And before LiveBlocks, they had this problem of like multiple nurses or doctors would be looking at the same patient file at the same time, and they would have like they would change stuff and like they would have conflicts in the data, and they wouldn't know that somebody was editing. And then we hit save, and then the first person would lose all the stuff that they had saved earlier. They used LiveBlocks during a hackathon and won the hackathon. And within 3 weeks, they were like paying customers. And so I thought that was a really cool use case of like, okay, there's like not like necessarily like a creative tool, but it's like, okay, because you like make a digital product feel like you're in the same space together, actually makes the efficiency for, in that case, nurses and doctors a lot better. So that's something I found super interesting because that's not necessarily like the first kind of use case you think about. So yeah, those are the two ones that I liked.
Yeah, that's interesting. It's funny that the name of the company is Dialogue, because I just heard of a company called Modal. They must get mixed up all the time.
Yeah, that's a good one.
So at the end of each episode, we ask more of like a future-facing question. Here we've been talking about kind of just like apps in general. So what do you think the future of apps is? Do you think it's more collaboration? Do you think every app should have live collaboration in it?
Yeah, I mean, the entire reason why we're doing Live Blocks is based on the fact that remote work is here to stay for a lot of companies. And even if you have an office, it's very likely you're going to be working not in the same physical space as somebody else. And so in this world that's becoming more and more digital, it's important that we're able to connect people together. And so for all SaaS products to become collaborative like Figma, there needs to be a company or some companies that play a role in that solution to make it very easy for developers within those companies to create those collaborative apps. And so for me, if I were to predict the future, I don't know if I'm right, but I think a big majority, if not all of the SaaS products that we have out there will have to be collaborative one way or another. And so that would be my number one bet. That's the number one, like, at the market, SaaS products. There are some digital experiences, maybe won't be as collaborative. There are spaces sometimes where it doesn't really make sense, but I think there's a big majority of cases where, like, everything we experience digitally will become collaborative. So, yeah, hopefully LiveBlocks will play a role into powering that infrastructure for the world. But yeah, that's kind of my bet. We'll see. We'll see if I'm right.
I think you might be. I think it's going to be important.
What do you think?
I would say, you know, it's interesting how, like, before the iPhone, we didn't have fully touchscreen devices that people just, like, naturally used. And now you have kids who come up with, like, iPads and stuff, and they try to touch TVs and touch computer screens because they just expect touch should work.
Yeah.
Right. And I think collaboration is also going to be that thing. It's like people are going to get, like, so used to having collaboration in so many projects that, like, kids are going to come up and just expect that they can, like, mess with stuff,
like, why,
with their friends.
Why isn't somebody, like, I send you your URL, like, why am I not seeing you in this app? Like, you know, it's going to be.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a good, totally. Good analogy. I didn't think about it that way, but that makes sense. Yeah.
Cool. With that, let's move on to tooltips. Remember, the full version of this episode is only available to subscribers. So to hear those tooltips, you'll have to become one. Cool. That wraps it up for tooltips. Thanks for coming on, Steven. This was a fun conversation about live collaboration and all of the design and coding considerations you have to make when building something like that.
Yeah, thanks for having me, guys. Appreciate it.
Yeah, it was so cool having you on. I mean, I think ever since that, like, again, when I first saw this was in the Vercel demo, I was like, ever since then, I was like, oh my God, this is so cool. I need to talk to them. So really excited to have you.
Thank you. It was great to meet you guys and enjoy the chat.